Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com. Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast, Friday, September 13th, 2024, episode 54. On today's show, we'll talk about Lucid Motors showcasing the Gravity three-row SUV and teasing its future midsize. General Motors and Hyundai are going to get together to collaborate on EVs. GM and EVgo announce a new flagship charging hub, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the ever cosmopolitan Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for in a number of YouTube channels. Now, let's get into it. What an extraordinary week of EV news, of activity, of things going on that's just been incredible to be part of and watch and observe. But we've actually been driving the cars as well. And Kyle, we missed you last week. We'll get on to where you were, because it was down to business last week when we missed you. But we didn't get a chance to talk about the Volvo EX90 with you. And that's important because this week, Volvo CEO Jim Rowan came out and said to the media, "We've learnt our lessons with it. We learnt our lessons on promising when the car was going to come with. We learnt our lessons on when we guided that we'd be ready by, and we've learned our lessons on bringing a vehicle to market and having to say to customers, well, there's a few things that are going to be coming not quite fully baked." MSRP starts at 80K in the US, 111 kilowatt hour battery. And let's talk about when you drove that vehicle. Didn't get a chance to talk to you last time about driving impressions. So what can you tell us?
Well, if anyone was worried, you know, like liked the full tour, likes the car, but was worried about how it drove, well, nothing really to worry about. There's a few little things that were a bit annoying, but overall, it's just a very quiet, very comfortable, nicely tuned car. But it's not super squishy and soft like an e-tron. It definitely has a little bit more composure, especially over some big bumps. And then, of course, it's not nearly as sporty as its cousin, the Polestar 3. Especially the Polestar 3 Performance, which I have a video on as well. And I'm actually heading up to Wyoming to go drive the Polestar 3. I'm just going to drive up there because it's not far from my house, only a few hours, and join the US launch of that car, which is so funny that I've already driven the car and like it, they're like at dealers. Anyone can go drive one. And they have an embargo on driving impressions from this event. But I'm still able to talk about how the car drives, at least because I've already driven it. So I don't know. It's Polestar 3 launch has been quite a mess in the US, from my opinion. And so is the EX90. I mean, the EX90, you know, back to the car we're talking about, this is a car that was supposed to launch with about 10 significant features that are not there at the start of production. And that is a lot of trust in a company that has not proven to make significant over-the-air software updates. I'm not saying everyone has the right to vote with their own money. They can just wait to buy the car until it's finished, which, as someone who owns a Cybertruck, which is still not ready, that might be a good decision, because my truck still doesn't have lane centering, as an example, and there is no promised timeline on when Volvo will get Apple CarPlay and LiDAR and, you know, significant safety functions updated to the vehicle, sound system improvements, other things as well. But the driving of EX90 is calm. It's high quality. The overall, you know, power is great. I think just around 500 horsepower. It's been a few weeks since I've driven it, maybe a month now, but it definitely boogied pretty well. The one issue was the rear clutch disconnect. So it runs front wheel drive, dual permanent magnet motor most of the time. So it's primary axle on the front motor, but the rear motor will disconnect under light cruising. But when you hit the throttle, it takes a long time for it to rev match, connect, and then give you power.
Can you feel it when you're driving? Can you feel it kick in?
You cannot notice any NVH or vibration or anything happening unless you're really trying to pay attention. All you notice is an extreme acceleration lag. And it really does feel like a turbocharger spooling up. Like it probably matches the combustion car way, or even it feels like a plug-in hybrid when you're in electric mode and floor it and have to wait for the combustion engine to spin up. And, you know, it's just really not a good. And we know it can be done so much better because Mercedes EQS all-wheel drive has a near instantaneous clutch disconnect, and so does Hyundai Kia Genesis with their vehicles. It is literally EV turbo lag, someone just commented. Yes, that's what it feels like. You can solve this problem by putting it in performance mode. Once you select performance mode, car stays connected all the time and instant power all the time. I wish it would default to that setting because I don't really care about range except for the couple stretches I need to make a charger here or there. I care about range a lot less than I care about just general nice driving characteristics. And I think most people probably aren't worried about range 99% of the time when they're charging at home, driving around the city. I wouldn't say it's dangerous, but it's borderline how slow the car is when you get into it and wait for the clutch disconnect to happen. So that's that. I will say just a couple other notes on the car. Car is great. One of the best new cars of the year to launch. 250 kilowatt charging on superchargers when they get access, because it will take well over 500 amps. It's the first non-Tesla vehicle in our market to charge at over 500 amps. And I was able to charge it at 540 amps. And that's just because that was the highest publicly available charger, the Delta High Power from EVgo. Superchargers will give it hopefully more. We don't know that to be true, but I don't know if they'll recognize there's a CCS adapter or if they'll recognize the native port and how that will work. Time will tell, but it certainly requests more than 500 amps. And in Europe, when they charge on superchargers, are getting 600 plus amps, maybe 650, close to 700. We'll see. And certainly a wonderful, wonderful car around. Doesn't push the needle in any way. It's not innovative. It's not, you know, saying we have the fastest charging car, we have the, you know, best riding car, the most performance oriented car. It's just a nice SUV that's electric, and that's what it needed to be, and they accomplished it.
So where does it sit? Kia EV9, which you had for 6 months on test, Rivian R1T can fit people, R1S can fit people in the back, Mercedes EQS SUV, Model X, of course, and we don't know the upcoming Lucid Gravity because, you know, no one's tested it yet. But where do you think this sits in and around that world?
Yeah, it's like, it definitely has its own little place because it has the quality feeling that Rivian R1S has that EV9 lacks, but it doesn't have this adventurous off-road capability. And it's just like to me, it's definitely, okay, if you max out your EV9, you can get to where this car gets. But it's a nicer car than an EV9. But of course, the EV9 is going to have the better charging performance, much more space. Like if you're space conscious, the EX90 is off. It is just very space inefficient. It's very narrow. It's hard to fit a lot of people in that car. It's really the electric car for people who fit in an XC90, which is certainly much smaller than a full-size Tahoe or something like that, where the EV9 is much more comparable to a Tahoe in terms of space, just as an example. So Yeah. EX90 main screen shutdown, not in our time driving the car. We had it for pretty much a full day, and we were able to shoot a full tour. We drove it a couple hundred miles, and we were able to charge it at a DC charger, and we didn't have a single glitch as far as I'm aware. Maybe the screen lagged once or twice for Jordan, but it seems like we put in the video, it's one software update away from being finished, which is, should you deliver a car that's not finished? I certainly have been through this, like I mentioned, and I'm surprised Volvo went so hardcore into the deliver now and fix it later.
Well, this is my final question to you, because you know you're a long-term Volvo fan. I imagine of probably old-school boxy Volvos, but all joking aside, there are a bit like Subaru buyers and Toyota buyers. There will be people that the last 4-5 cars they've owned or leased have been Volvos, and they're going to walk into that Volvo dealership because they like what they know, and Volvo are sticking with the XC90 size, and obviously the new plug-in hybrid XC90, the styling is being updated to match that of the EX90. They bring that design language together. So the vehicles are going to look very similar, and they're thinking of going all electric. But it's interesting, I said this point on my podcast this week, was that Tesla pulled off the magic trick, you know, whether it was admiration for, you know, Elon or the team or the mission, or look, there's countless factors of how Tesla has pulled it off to be given leeway by their buyers and almost at times worn as a badge of honor. I would say at some times Tesla fans have been like, well, this doesn't work, it doesn't work, but I love Mike, it's the best car I've ever owned. So how do you think that gamble has paid off or not with Volvo, and in terms of how long do you wait to bring the car to market before other cars, the aforementioned ones that I said, are eating its lunch, versus saying to a traditional Volvo buyer, or maybe they're not aiming at traditional Volvo buyers, I'll let you answer that, hey, we're going to improve the car as you own it. What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I'm not inside of Volvo making these decisions every day. All I can do is complain about them, which is my job. And I just think, it's important to be somewhat consumer advocate in this case. And I think it's a bigger point now than ever, because we've seen a lot of automakers. And I was just listening to my friend Matt on the Smoking Tire podcast. He was mentioning this whole topic as well, which is automakers are becoming so much more loosey-goosey in his words, fix it in post. Fix it in post-production, which is get the car out and then deal with it later. And like I mentioned, Cybertruck was really the first main example of that, where we are running up on 1 year since deliveries with still no lane centering on that vehicle. No lane centering in a Tesla. Crazy. So is that going to be the case with Volvo? Are they, you know, just trying to prove that they have the over-the-air update capability? We don't know. There's a reason that these features are not available in the car today. And Volvo, I think, took the approach of the more suppliers, the more partners, the more we can outsource, the better. Because they're always highlighting the Luminar LiDAR and the Apple CarPlay and the this, that, and the other. That's not their tech. And that's all the stuff that's not ready. And so that's where I think maybe doing it vertically integrated, in many cases, they at least have control over timelines. Where here they're relying on perhaps third-party sources that they have no control. And they're like, hey, we just need to get this car off on the road. I do want to make a point. My friend Volvo Christian is in the chat. Shout out to his YouTube channel, by the way. He makes great Volvo content in Norway. He had mentioned that in the Twin Performance EX90, there's different tuning. But I was actually driving the Twin Performance EX90, and it does have a stronger rear electric motor, but it does not default to all-wheel drive. So it defaults to front wheel drive and then will rip in the clutch unless you hit the performance button. Now it could have market specific tuning to game EPA or WLTP and different things. That's possible. Polestar 3 Performance defaults to all wheel drive and then you can go into range mode. Whereas the Polestar 3 non-performance defaults to front wheel drive and then you have to put it in performance mode. And that's how they get a little bit more of the big range number on the standard car. So they can play around with these things and maybe it'll change over time. But anyway, just wanted to respond to his comment.
And final thoughts from you on that topic of being effectively a front-wheel drive car. We saw the refreshed Volvos and refreshed Polestars, mid-cycle refresh, switch that and put a single motor, at least for the single motor variants of those, and go and say, actually, these should be rear-wheel drive vehicles. Maybe that was for driving dynamics, maybe it was for spacing and packaging, maybe it was a bigger motor, it's a single motor vehicle. What are your thoughts on whether automakers should be making front wheel drive EVs or rear wheel drive EVs? Which one does the disconnect, or just doesn't it matter?
Well, it depends on the exact package, but we do know that the single motor EX90 will be rear motor. So it's interesting how the front motor is the efficient one in the all-wheel drive cars, but when you have a single motor, it will be in the back. I've always been, from an enthusiast standpoint, which not every car needs to be an enthusiast car. It can actually ruin many cars when you try to make them fun to drive, because some cars just need to be comfortable. I think what makes a lot of sense to me is, you know, perfect drivetrain for Kyle would be permanent magnet, primary axle in the rear, and then probably either an induction motor up front if you don't have great permanent magnet technology, or dual permanent magnet, and then you can sort of shut one off at low to medium speeds, which is how Lucid does it. And I think they're the only ones that can send zero current to a permanent magnet motor, essentially shutting them off. And I think they're like below 85 miles an hour. Above 85, they have to send a bit of current to the motor, but it's pretty magical. And that, to me, that's the best. You get the nice low torque, the high efficiency, and the space efficiency of permanent magnet motors. But yeah, clutch disconnects, I just hate them. I just don't want a mechanical component that can break in my driveline.
Excellent. All right, before we move on, I'll just give Tom or Dom any chance to chip in on anything that we've talked about so far, because a lot to get into because we missed you last week. Before I do it, I want to silence you guys. Anything you want to say, Dom?
I'm just glad to hear that you think the Volvo EX90 will find some buyers out there. I was a little bit worried that it would get crowded out with all the excitement around the Rivian brand. And, it's just it's a tighter place right now, you know, with the Gravity coming out, the three rows. And it's a tight three row too, right? So it's not going to be maybe the favorite of the three rows. And there's also the Escalade IQ that's coming out too. It's a slightly different kind of car, of course, but... Also,
but you mentioned the Gravity. That to me seems like the direct competition for the Volvo. And I'm not sure in one area, because I haven't driven the Gravity, but I can't imagine it being really worse in any category than the Volvo, except for the sound system, because Lucid has proven they don't know how to put a good sound system in the car until they put a good one in. And I was listening to this one in our Lucid this week. I was like, wow, this is awful. Can't even hear it. But yeah, so the EX90, I think, wins best car audio of the year.
And Bowers and Wilkins.
Yeah, and they did a great job on that system. It could find some improvements here and there, but overall, Gravity seems like it's going to be so much more space efficient, so much, interior space is going to be way larger, range is going to be more, efficiency is going to be better, charging performance can't be worse than the Volvo. Volvo charges pretty meh. And it's going to be an interesting market when that comes out. For now, though, it's like someone wants the Volvo image, just a nice car that doesn't offend people. And it's certainly, it's certainly a logical next step for an XC90 owner.
It says like an air of sophistication, I think, in the cabin.
Yeah. An interesting thing to think about. We won't discuss it now, but that is doing it yourself versus not. And of course, Lucid and Rivian and Tesla, big fans of doing it themselves. And as you've mentioned, Volvo buying in things which aren't quite working yet. And maybe that's the way to do it, because Rivian bagged $5 billion of investment from Volkswagen. And a story this week, which went largely unreported by German media, and that was a lot of unrest at CARIAD, where thousands of people work, which is the software bit of Volkswagen, from senior level management all the way down, to say, well, what are we doing then if Rivian software is going to be in future Volkswagens? And it's not quite that simple that Rivian are doing it all. But again, a case of, well, did it even cost a CEO a job back in the day with Volkswagen just not being able to get their software firing on all cylinders. Sorry to bring in a combustion metaphor. Right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about... So you were working last week when we missed you. You're in Quebec in Canada visiting Flo, F-L-O, a Canadian company that operates a charging network, also sells home and commercial chargers as well. For our global audience, and apologies if our Canadian viewers and listeners know all about this, but what can you tell us about Flo? Are they expanding into the U.S.? Are they in the U.S. already? And what do they make there?
Yeah, so I went over to Flo to shoot a video on their new DC fast charger, and it's cool. It was a unique design. I don't know. I had some questions about it. They're like, come on up and check it out. So I went over, and it's a so their new Flo Ultra DC charger is essentially a 320 kilowatt charger, but it's designed for two cars only. Most DC chargers have like one dispenser for one parking space. This is designed for two parking spaces. So you put it in between two, and then you can nose up or pull in. Or if you can also do pull-throughs. So they're perfect for having one car come up on either side. It's a really cool idea, actually. And they have some innovative cable management. And, you know, I've met with the designers of them. And that was really, really fun. The video will go up hopefully this weekend. And we have a bunch of videos backlogged, by the way. We've just been holding them to give YouTube a little bit of a break this week. But we have some awesome videos coming up over the next month or two. What should I tell you about Flo? Well, Flo, of course, is a charge point operator in Canada. Huge, maybe the market leader, but close to it in Canada. And they have expanded to the US. So they have DC charging in certain markets, but primarily AC charging in LA and New York with very high quality, very robust EVSE equipment. Tom knows Flo very well. He knows about the metal casing on the level twos, but those were only 32 amps and they were very expensive, but they were hardy. And so, you know, Flo's been around for a really long time, 12 years, 13 years, something like that. They were one of the originals. And just now I think they're like, oh, okay, we're going hardcore into putting in infrastructure. So they've got a few $100 million, you know, cash influx from some investment thing. And they're going to be building out a network of, you know, expanding network of their high power DC chargers now, because Flo is always known for super reliable chargers, but very slow, 50 kilowatts, 100 kilowatts max. So now they're finally getting into the high power game, which will be really great. And the high amperage game for level two charging up to 80 amps now their units will support. So really good to see them going with, you know, higher power charging. Yeah, certainly Vermont has a big Flo DC charging network. I've used them there, and yeah, pretty cool. So basically, yes, that was fun. Got to go meet with them, and we'll have, like, I don't know if anyone remembers the inside charge point video I did a year ago or so, where we went and like went in their engineering labs and tore everything apart, and it was like a couple hours long. Same thing with Flo. Super right. Cool, super nerdy, very educational. Hopefully everyone will understand it.
Hey, talking of charging, let me pop this on screen very quickly. I'm going to let you dive in. There was a story. I was just looking through some news before we came on, because I had 10 minutes before we went live today. And there was a press release I saw that I had a flick through, and they didn't tell me the charging hardware. So I had a look there. It was written up by Auto Express, the car magazine, UK car magazine. And I thought, oh, fantastic. They might report on it. And they didn't talk about the actual hardware as well. So let me pop this on screen and crowdsource an answer, because they obviously, the mainstream press, I saw like 480 kilowatt DC charger goes into Blackpool in the UK. That's in the northwest of our country, by the way. 400, it will charge EVs at 480 kilowatts. I'm like, well, it won't, but I appreciate you reporting on the electric vehicle world. But again, the point of it being is that it will take two electric vehicles double heading on a single piece of hardware. Pros and cons to that, by the way. I'm a huge fan of, in this stage of the EV adoption curve, a single box, a single piece of metal, a parking space in front of it, pull up to that and plug it in. But anyway, if people get the hang of it, yeah, two car parking spaces, one charger. It doesn't mean that you can't charge on the other one. Although it does in some cases, but let's not get into that. What is this hardware, everyone? If you're in the comments, what is that? I briefly had a look a minute ago. I'm like, I don't recognize that, but maybe it's just, maybe I'm being a little bit, let me zoom in on that, maybe a little bit
looks
dumb.
Like an
maybe.
ATM.
What is that? What is that hardware?
It's like a cash point.
The logo says Project EV on the top. That's just the installer.
It looks to me like the original Blink DC fast chargers from like,
what is that?
2012.
What is that? Anyway, it's 480 kilowatts in total, but obviously they split that between two EVs. They've pictured it with an Ioniq 5. They could have put a new Taycan in front of it and got some better speeds. Mark says, is it a live wire? No, it's not a live wire. It looks industrial. I'll give you that. But either way, pros and cons to putting in a little bit of hardware into your car parking spaces, a bit like flow, just overpowering that. You can split the power or not. Oh, no, I also saw this week as well. I'll take that off screen. Also saw this week, saw some people call it a PR stunt, but the Cybertruck in Bratislava, in Slovakia, imported, and they just hit 400 kilowatts on a 600 kilowatt DC fast charger. But again, it didn't say the amps that were going into it. I guess you could work that out, but if they told you the state of charge or the voltage of the vehicle, but I thought it's interesting. Maybe Tesla are winding up the 4680s, and that was always the promise. Hey, we're going to get, be very uber cautious, and then we'll start to work out how much we can lean on our new cells. So, right, maybe it'd be a story for a future podcast. Dom, before I move on, I think I heard you take an intake of breath.
Just going to ask Kyle about the flow. Are they manufacturing those things up in Canada, or is it?
They have Canada for all their Canadian installations, and then the stuff that requires NEVI will be built in the US. So it's either Canada or Michigan, I think. It's in the video, the exact locations, yes.
Cool. Thank you.
Finally, before we move on, you dropped into Eaton this week, which anyone watching this with an interest in the industry would know that name, but many people wouldn't. What do they do there in terms of electrical stuff?
Oh, my goodness. What don't they do there? I'm sure everyone has some Eaton components in their home or in their car. They're hugely, deeply involved in the electrical, powering of our country. And they have unveiled some new charging products. I mean, Tom will remember back in the day, Eaton used to do level 2 chargers, and there just wasn't enough scale for them. So they got out of the business. Now that EVs are, of course, rising in popularity again, they're back in and they're creating AC and DC charging hardware. And, certainly not the most beautifully designed hardware, I'll be the first to say it, but certainly some very high quality and very innovative stuff. For example, they have a smart breaker for an EVSE that literally just pops into your breaker panel and out comes a J1772 connection or NACS, whichever you prefer. And of course, we learned a lot about some switch gear. You can see here millions of dollars worth of switch gear in that previous photo, which wasn't a main focus of the video, but I took everyone on a tour of the Experience Center, also another one that will be going up in just a few days. And really, this one's for the super nerds. It was awesome. And we learned a lot about their future plans for DC hardware. They're going to be going with giant, sort of like charging hub-sized battery packs, where we're talking megawatt hour plus battery packs to go with to serve a bunch of DC chargers at a hub. Because the grid connections right now are some of the hardest things and some of the biggest holdups to putting in charging equipment. I'm dealing with it now, of course. We wanted to put high power charging at our out-of-spec hub, and it's I basically ordered the transformer, and it's over 2 years away. And that's the, we can't do anything until that shows up, pretty much. And so, it's really, really rough. So they're going to solve a lot of that, which will be cool. But the primary focus of our video was on their AC and DC hardware today and a lot of the software that runs it on the back end, but a lot of future talk as well.
Right. And you not only mentioned the out-spec hub, which we've talked about once before, if anyone missed that, check out a previous episode, but also working on getting that that DC charger up and running at CSU. So can you just fill us in on what the latest is with that? You mentioned it.
Oh, yeah. So our DC charger, that the first one that we've installed, other than our Autel 40 kilowatt, we put in this X-Charge Net Zero series, this NZS, which is a battery integrated DC charger. And it's at our office at CSU Powerhouse, which is a really cool spot. And it's up and running. We've been using it all week. People have been using it. It's so cool. It's a 200 kilowatt hour usable roughly battery pack attached to a dispenser. We have about 20 kilowatts flowing into it from the grid. And so it's able to full charge overnight and, basically just top up whenever cars aren't charging on it. And hopefully everyone can get high power charging before the battery runs out. That'll be what we attempt to find out. And if the battery does run out, they'll just be given the 19 kilowatt low power grid connection. Once they unplug, then it will send the power back to the battery and charge that up. It's been a really interesting process. We shot many videos on this. And so again, you know, alluding to fun videos to come, this is certainly one that is shot and been sent off for editing. So can't wait to can't wait to share that process with everyone. It was not easy. It was crazy to install a charger, you know, especially one that should have been easy, but we had a lot of permitting challenges from the city. And once we got through that, then it was pretty smooth sailing, but it's been interesting.
Yeah, there's two batches. The Net Zero series come with either the 233 or 466 kilowatt hours of battery storage. And so you've got the just over around 200 kilowatt hours usable on that. In terms of the grid connection, was that limited by physically the power that you could get into it or demand charge considerations? What was that?
No, so it actually, we could get all the power in the world to it if we wanted to bore through our parking lot. But because we had an existing level 2 charger there, we only had a 1-inch conduit. And so to get this 1-inch conduit, you know, to the fill level maximum required, we only could run, 50 amp breaker with 40 amps continuous of power. And it's at 480. So the Xcharge can take either 208 or 480. Ours actually is only 480, but their new ones can do lower, normal business voltage. Thankfully we have 480. So I was like, let's go as high voltage as possible so we can get as much power into that thing as we can. And so we have a really low current, low current input, but we do have 480 three phase running to it. And yeah, it's been working great. I mean, I've been monitoring. I can monitor it remotely. I'm going to create a live stream so everyone can kind of check in and see what's going on with it. And I've just set the charge limit to 90% for the weekend because I expect less use over the weekend. No need to let it sit at 100%, but I have been full charging it, letting it get up to 100. And yeah, it's been really fun, really cool. It was quite the setup process. I'm still learning it and we'll of course share more as we learn more.
That's so cool. I remember, you know, in the 90s and early noughties, when the webcam phase kind of swept the internet, and they just, you know, you think, oh, wow, I can watch a webcam of the waves in Hawaii or something. And you'd watch it and think, well, nothing's really happening, but it's cool. You know, I'd like to see a live dashboard. If you could host that somewhere, one of our viewers or listeners can sort this out, the tech side of it, and build your little web app or something. And I'd log into that. I'd be like, oh, is Kyle charging his car? Oh, he is. Oh, look, he's charging. Get my anorak on and zip it up and be a complete nerd. I'd love that. Please do that. Please do it.
Yeah, we are going to. And I think we got permission where we can live stream the video feed now. And so we may just put a little sign up that says, like, you're on camera.
Yes. Something.
I don't know.
Yes.
And I'm going to put a little sign up that says, okay, this is experimental. If your car blows up, please don't sue me because I have nothing to do with this charger. They just let us borrow it.
Yes.
They gave it to us. Yeah. So it was really cool.
Oh, that's
so cool. So how many cars do you think it can handle in a day? Like, how much throughput?
Well, we did that. We brought 4 cars completely dead, and the charger ran 2 hours at maximum power until it died.
Okay.
And then it just went to low power. However, right. Most people, based off the logs that I'm seeing this week, most people are charging like 20 to 30 kilowatt hour sessions. That seems to be like the average session, not 80 to 120 kilowatt hour sessions.
Right.
And so, in fact, yesterday was the first day that we did zero testing with it. The lowest the battery got was 75%.
Right.
Okay.
That's interesting.
And it was used a lot. I mean, I think we had 8 sessions yesterday.
Can you send those people here to New Jersey, Kyle? Because during the week, I was trying to do a recording on the Equinox. I'm doing tons of DC fast charge recordings, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. So I pull up to one of the sites, and of course, it's full. And there were, this is the site with the 10 chargers. 7 of the chargers, the vehicles were over 80%. And they were just chugging along. Some of them were at 96, 91, 86. And the people are just sitting in their car, just, you know, waiting to get that 100% charge. And I'm like, I'm all for Electrify America doing this, kicking you off at 80% or doubling the charge, like the cost after 80 or 85%, because it's nuts. They'll sit there for 40 minutes going from 90 to 100%. And so it's good to hear that some of the people out there are just going in for a chunk, 30 kilowatt hour, 25, 30 kilowatt hour. and taking off, just taking what they need and leaving. You know,
that's, keep in mind, Tom, this is not really a public charger yet. Yeah. So it's for the people that work or students or faculty. And pretty much we're in a super nerd sphere of a building. Pretty much everyone knows battery health and longevity, and no one, I think we've had a couple, like we had one guy in a Model Y charge to 100%. But like whatever. And so I can set the charger to kick people off at 80, 90, 95%. I can just say, cool, stop charging. And then I can put a little sign up that says, this will stop you. And we can play around with that. These are the things we can experiment with. We can play with different pricing models. I mean, one thing that we decided to do was we decided to give everyone who works at the university or as a student or associated, because they're letting us host the charger, free charging. But then for the public, we're going to charge a very small fee. That's just going to go to a little service bucket. So if someone snaps the cables or if something needs maintenance, then we have a little, you know, just a little service fund to keep it going, which of course, I have spare parts on hand. I'm not saying this is, don't rely on this charger. That's what I'm saying. We're not a charge point operator. We're just learning. And, yeah, but it would be fun. We could set the limit at like, don't charge past 80 and see if that pisses people off.
Yeah. So now we're getting a couple of comments here from Greg and Buddy and John saying that, you know, people like to charge to 100% and they don't care about the other people. They care about themselves. It's in your own best interest to leave. Who wants to sit there for 45 minutes and get, you know, 30 miles of driving range? It's ridiculous, in my opinion, to sit there and wait. I understand if you're on a long trip and you need to get that extra, you know, couple of kilowatt hours to make it to the next charger or to your charging station. But it's such a waste of time, of your time. Don't worry about other people's time, to sit there for, you know, 40 minutes sometimes to go from 90 to 100%. On a lot of EVs, the top end is really slow. So that's what I mean. It's not, I'm not asking people to care about other people. That's a losing battle. It's not worth your time to do it. You know, I've talked to this one guy this week. He had an Audi GT and he's telling me he's got four EVs. He went all in on EVs in the family and he's done with EVs. As soon as the lease is up on these four cars, he's going back to gas. And he's got four EVs. The guy was very well off. I mean, he owns four like new EVs. The average price was probably $80,000, right? His kids have them and everything. And he's telling me how charging is such a pain in the ass. And I'm like, dude, like, why do you charge here? Like, why are you standing here at a friggin' Walmart parking lot at 11 o'clock at night charging your $120,000 Audi GT? You know, when you just charge at home. He's like, well, it came with free charging. That's why I got them. That's why you got them.
No.
You know, that's really why you got them? Then, please trade them back in and go back to gas. You know, he's got a three-bay garage at home with two chargers in his garage, and he's wasting an hour of his time, you know, every 4 or 5 days to sit in a Walmart parking lot at 11 o'clock at night. It's nuts. It's just insane. I'm just glad most of the automakers are transitioning off this free charging stuff. Not all of them yet, but most of them are saying, you know what? There's better ways of incentivizing purchases. I know it's a big carrot. When you're in a dealership and you can tell that customer, look, you don't have to pay for fuel for 3 years. That's a huge carrot, especially people coming from gas, because they're used to, you know, shelling out that $40, $50, $60 every 4 or 5 days. And now you're telling them 3 years, you don't have to pay a penny. I mean, they'll drive a Model T if they could drive for 3 years and not pay a penny. So I get it. It's a psychological thing. But then I'm telling the guy, you know, if you took this thing at home, it would be about $16 to charge. Like, dude, you're driving a $130,000 car. You're wasting an hour of your life for $16. You know, it just, I don't know. I get it with the entry level cars, people that can just barely afford a car. Maybe they live in an apartment. That $15 makes a big difference to them. I get it. But I think there's other ways we can incentivize it. Anyway, I've done my free charging rant of the day.
Yeah, I did.
That's a good one.
I did I don't do rants. Not as good as Tom's. But I did a bit.
You,
on,
yeah, you.
No, I've never ranted about
Toyota rants or Elon rants.
Like Toyota.
Toyota said this week. Let me say this. Toyota said this week. They feel that they need to rebuild the story around hydrogen. That was the phrase. I'm thinking, well, you know, the story needs rebuilding for a reason. Anyway,
being sued in California by the owners of the Mirai because they can't refuel.
Yeah, multiple suits.
They say EV charging is hard. They can't refuel.
This week in Germany, they ran out. They got hydrogen trains in Germany. Can't run them. They run out. I mean, it's crazy. The idea of building out the products and the infrastructure together is wonderful. There's electricity everywhere in the world. Well, in many places. I'm not talking about, you know, I know there's issues, you know, with Africa and how people, you know, have access to a light bulb, and I'm not making light of that. But there's electricity everywhere in the world, and it's fabulously hard to get EV charging smooth, so let alone hydrogen. Hey, I'll pop this on screen. You know, reminds me when you're talking about sharing charging. This is why I love distributed power so much. Kempower aren't the only ones that do it. This is a site in Norway. I think there's 36 pedestals in this one. I don't think it's site-wide. I think the power blocks are 25 kilowatts a power block in the cabinets. I think they're clustered in sixes. I think, anyway. But someone correct me, any of our Norwegian viewers that have been to this site.
I'm pretty sure you can do more than six, but maybe this one is configured that way.
I know you can do more than six, but either way, there's something telling me that these are clustered. But either way, so that way, when someone's sitting pulling 25 kilowatts or 20 kilowatts at the end of their charge session, the one next to it can go to the power cabinets and go, I want 320. And if it's got the spare capacity, it will give it to you. So that's where, you know, that's, oh, man. Anyway,
see, that works for today. And I'm a fan of that split power distribution idea. Tesla superchargers work this way, and it works almost flawlessly. I really like this idea. However, I think as we build charging infrastructure for the next 20 or 30 years to go in the ground, you're going to see cars charge high power all the way up top. And then you might have some more site level load management. So I also love for highway corridors, dedicated, big boy, non-sharing power. So you're guaranteed when you get a plug to get everything. And it matters more when you're driving a very high power charging vehicle, which hopefully more cars will become into the future.
Yeah, we've already just seen the glimpse of that. And you know, you've tested some yourself where they do take really big power until they're pretty much the top of the pack, and we're just scratching that surface. So I'm looking forward to that. Got some battery stuff on the podcast this week, actually. We'll talk Mercedes-Benz and Factorial later in the podcast, so stick around for that.
Oh, Martin, one thing that I don't think is on the list is what we did yesterday, but it's really going to be interesting to our viewers.
What's that?
We did a range test of the new Model 3 Long Range, and we compared it to the previous generation Model 3 Long Range, identical specifications of the pre and post refresh. And take a guess as to how much farther the new car went than the old car. I think we can safely assume, okay, the new one goes a bit farther. But how much farther do you think Tesla's mid-cycle refresh makes the car go?
10, 15 miles?
35.
20.
Over 60.
Whoa! Wow.
And it's same motor. Same motors, same battery.
Is this the aerodynamics?
The tires? Video will go up today. Tires, okay. Wheels, yes, because we ran the OE wheel and tire with pretty much the same mileage on them. That's accounting for degradation, by the way, because the older car we used had 2.8 kilowatt hour less usable than the new one. So that's accounting for it. It actually went like 70 plus miles farther. 370 miles at 70 miles an hour, blowing past EPA, completely smashed EPA. First time I've ever seen that in a Tesla.
That's what I was going to say. Never saw a Tesla beat EPA on a range test.
Yeah, but we've never tested a Tesla with the new EPA testing, because the EPA rated range of the old car was actually higher than the new car. The new car is 341. Yep. And the old car was 353. But that's when EPA testing was easier.
Wow.
Or 352, something like that. Yeah. So 370 miles at 70 miles an hour. No smaller buffer, right? Because they're the identical battery pack with the same tuning. And we ran them from full until they stopped moving, till they both went 2 miles past when they could no longer maintain 70 miles an hour. The cooling fans both kicked on at the same time during the charging process. It was amazing how identical all the steps were, and we'll share all of that. But this is the sneak before the video goes out in a bit. Jordan's getting it up right now. But that is so impressive. So what we really need to do is we need to test the long-range rear drive now. That's the one that we need to do, because this was long-range all-wheel drive. And that should do another, you know, we might see close to 400 miles in this case. Maybe. There was a little bit of wind yesterday. It wasn't like perfect conditions. It was close to it. But damn, I mean, anyone, this is going to be a huge story, because mechanically the cars should be almost identical. It's a wheel, tire, and aerodynamics change. Both cars had heat pumps. They both had, you know, basically identical thermal management systems. We made it so even that no cars had tint. We set the same HVAC settings in both. We ran side by side. Everything was as close as it could possibly be. Huge difference.
Wow. That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Incredible. Someone claims shenanigans, but you'll see the data. I mean, it's all right there. We'll post it all. We even ran the cars in the same driving cycle ahead of the drive to make sure that we had Scan My Tesla in both cars. We made sure battery packs were at identical temperatures. Everything was done as clearly and repeatedly as possible.
Wow. That's big news. I look forward to that video. Wow. Okay, let me take that off
the screen. It's coming out today, you say?
Yeah, so the old car had 30,000 miles on it, of course, but the tires only had the same exact mileage as the new one, because it's Colton's Model 3, but it actually, he runs aftermarket wheels for the most part. So the new car had about 6,000 miles on it. Colton's wheels and tires had about 7,000 miles on it, pretty close. And so the old car did 296 miles. The new car did 370. And that's both at 70. However, when you use the usable capacity of the new car with the efficiency of the old car, it should have done 310 miles on a fresh one. So that makes sense.
Well, and that's the way to do range testing, is the way that Kyle and the team are doing it there. It's called doing half-decent automotive journalism, and not everybody does that. Speaking of which, I'm not an EV journalist, by the way. I'm an idiot that hosts a podcast, but a mention for other EV journalists, sisters and brothers at Autoblog. We have enjoyed reading Autoblog over the years, and many people have friends who worked there or even worked there. We're very much sad to see the old era of Autoblog go. We'll see what happens with that website, whatever happens to it next. But a lovely 20th anniversary and goodbye post they put out earlier this week. Right.
That's where I started.
Yeah, it was Blog Green.
That's where I started, Autoblog Green, and blended into Autoblog, and kind of sad to see that all be taken apart. These private equity firms, I don't know.
But there we go. Yes. So I'm sure they will, they have a plan, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about, let's have a little talk about the Equinox, because it's been all of 5 minutes since we let Tom have a good chat about this week. You put out a video. The other Equinox EV enthusiasts and other EV owners will probably find helpful. One of the issues, Tom, compatibility issues between car and charger. How is it resolved? What happened? I think you're on mute.
Yeah, maybe
Tom.
I'm mute.
There we go.
Sorry, guys. So, a couple of weeks ago, I went in the garage to plug in on AC. And as I mentioned earlier, all I've been doing is DC fast charging the Equinox since I got it, just doing recordings after recordings. I haven't even AC charged it. So this might've been the first time I plugged in. So I plugged in using the Tesla universal wall connector first. And it said, you know, vehicle cannot charge. But, you know, we've seen compatibility issues with Tesla's wall connectors from time to time. They even have a compatibility mode that you could put the charger into. I didn't do that previously because, honestly, I've never had a problem. And I charge everything in here. I get all the vehicle loans and everything. Never had a problem. Every now and then, there'll be like a 1 or 2 second delay before the vehicle begins charging. But I never had a problem. And you guys know I had a Bolt here for a year. I used to charge the Bolt with this all the time. So when I plugged in and it didn't work, I said, okay, this is, maybe there's something wrong with the Tesla. Maybe I need to put it in compatibility mode, but let me just charge it up on the Ford Charge Station Pro. So I plugged in the Ford Charge Station Pro, same thing came up, fault, cannot charge, problem with charging station. Well, I said, wow. So I took the Grizzly off the wall and said, let me just try one more. Plug that in, charge it again, says your battery cannot charge, charging station issue detected. And so I went back and forth between the Ford and the Grizzly. I didn't even try to do the Tesla again. For like 15, 20 minutes, nothing would charge. And I know for a fact it wasn't charged. Some people say, well, it's charging. It just says it's not charging. My vehicle was not charging. I know for a fact I waited. I left it plugged in for like 15 minutes. It would have gone up a percentage or two, the state of charge, and it didn't. So I put out this short. It was like, look, the Micronox won't charge on AC. I don't know what's going on with it. That fault would not clear. So I went inside and had ate dinner, relaxed for like an hour, came back out. The fault was cleared. So then I plugged in the Ford Charge Station Pro and it worked. So I was like, okay, whatever happened, the Tesla triggered something and it the vehicle wouldn't charge anywhere. Now, as far as I would believe, if there was a compatibility issue with the universal wall connector, as soon as I unplugged it and the vehicle powered down and powered back up, I should have been able to charge it with another charger, which wasn't the case. The whatever fault that the wall connector created, it hung on. It wouldn't let go until the vehicle went into deep sleep, which happens, you know, usually in about 30 minutes, the vehicle really powers down everything and then resets. So that it had to go into a deep sleep before it would accept AC power. So I then put the vehicle, the charger, in the compatibility mode. I went into my app and said, all right, maybe this really, this obviously started the problem, but GM should have this worked out. There shouldn't, in today's EV market, the manufacturers should be testing their vehicles for compatibility with all of the most popular chargers. They can't do it with all of them, but they have to have the top 15 or 20 chargers in their garages, engineering, making sure that there's not compatibility, but there still is with the Tesla. So I put it in compatibility mode. I made this video showing how to put it in compatibility mode. And then when I plugged it in, yes, it had that 3 or 4 second delay where it was like red light saying there's a problem with the charger, but then it started charging. So, then it accepted it. I'm still going to stay away from this for a little bit and not use it on the Equinox. There's no need to. I have other chargers in here, but there is definitely some sort of a glitch with the Equinox, at least for sure. Perhaps all the Ultium vehicles, I don't know, with the Tesla wall connector. Although I did charge a Hummer EV on this when I had the Hummer on loan. So that's why I put out the video to kind of tell people, look, if you're having this kind of issue, this is what you do. You put it in compatibility mode, which it wasn't a secret. I mean, a lot of people know about compatibility mode, not everybody, for the Tesla charging equipment. But that's what you do. If you have an Equinox and you have a universal wall connector and you seem to have some sort of a charging glitch, it worked for me. Hopefully that will correct the issue for you.
Actually, Tom, I have two wall connectors in my garage, same ones, the universal ones, and they will not charge my smart car.
Yeah. Really? Even in compatibility mode, I'm sure you've put them in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely the Tesla charging equipment definitely has glitches with other manufacturers from time to time. I can understand the smart car a little bit, Kyle, because it was, you know, first of all, they're not making it anymore. It was a low production vehicle. I don't think Mercedes was going to pour a ton of money into that. They probably should have spent more money for testing for compatibility. But look, I remember back, that's how I started getting into reviewing charging equipment. Way back when I first started doing EVs, like this EV wouldn't work with this charger and this EV wouldn't work with this charger. And I was testing them to see which ones had problems. And I actually ended up having a couple companies, Mercedes was one of them, actually reaching out to me and saying, have you noticed any issues with our car with this charger or with the juice box? Well, back then, yeah, it was still juice box, but it was eMotorworks. And that's what got me started in reviewing compatibility issues. It's mostly gone away at this point. Most of the vehicles will charge on just about anything. Every now and then there's a glitch, but that's a low volume car, Kyle, that's not sold anymore. So I can understand why Mercedes and Super Smart wouldn't invest the time in making sure it worked on every charger.
Yeah, but Tom, level two charging, as you know, it's just very basic PWM signals. It should be. It shouldn't be needing to be interoperable, tested, like DC charging might need to be. So, but then the question becomes, I thought maybe my e-Golf won't charge on it because e-Golfs have a very weird proximity sensor, communication, and like the old, specifically 2016, my e-Golf does have interfacing issues with a lot of charging, but nope, that charges just fine. So it's just the Smart, and it's only on the universal wall connector, not the normal one. I've had wall connectors, Gen 2, whatever, charge my Smart on them all the time. It's just the new ones.
I've had some of the engineers from some of the companies explain to me why there's compatibility issues, and you know what they basically told me is, look, sometimes the manufacturer of the charging equipment interprets the voltage ranges and temperature ranges for the J1772 differently than what we do as a manufacturer, and their charger might accept something that's slightly or deliver something slightly out of our parameters, and the vehicle just shuts down and won't take it. So that's how it was explained to me back in the days. I had a lot of talks with BMW about this. As you know, I was very involved in BMW's program, and I got to go to their engineering departments, and that's where they used to test the chargers there. And it absolutely was a problem early on, particularly for the Leviton charger and the Bosch charger. They had some compatibility issues with a bunch of EVs. They wouldn't charge them. But for now, it's mostly worked out, except for the Tesla universal wall connector. It still seems like it has some glitches. But what I was saying is I can understand why Mercedes didn't spend time to make sure everything works within its parameters. But I can't excuse GM for not, because this is like the Ultium, and the Equinox is supposed to be their new high volume people's car electric vehicle. And they should make sure, they know the Tesla charging equipment is one of the most popular chargers on the market, has a huge market share, the Tesla Universal Wall Connector, especially now because we're doing this transition. It's the only charger that doesn't need a secondary adapter to charge both NACS and J1772. So people are buying the hell out of these. They have to make sure their vehicles don't have a problem with this. And if they do have a problem with it, you get on the phone with Tesla. They're already talking to Tesla on charging compatibility. So, hey guys, why is it, figure this out, and let's just make it work so our customers have a seamless charging experience. But they haven't. And I think if you put it in compatibility mode, it should solve it. It solved it for me. Mm. So, but in addition, since we're talking about Equinox and Equinox charging, either later today or tomorrow morning, my first really deep dive into Equinox DC fast charging is going to come out. I spent way too much time working on this video. I have like tons of charts and graphs and everything, not just the simple charging curve. I've got a lot of stuff that I'm going to make downloadable too for people. Stuff like how long to add 50 miles of range, 100 miles of range, 150, 200, all that stuff. Basically it comes down to the fact that the Equinox is not a good DC fast charging EV. We talked about the low pack voltage on it. When you plug in, the battery's at like 265 or 266 volts. It's incredibly low. You maxed out at 100%, it's at 335, something like that, which is super low voltage. And everybody knows, you should know if you're watching this podcast, the amount of power, the kilowatts that the vehicle takes in is volts times amps. So if you have super low voltage, you've got to pull more current. You need more amps to get a decent charging rate. So that means the vehicle has to pull a super high amount of amps. It has a 150 kilowatt DC fast charge limit. So you'd say, well, let's just use 150 kilowatt chargers. Don't take up a 350 stall. The problem is most of the 150 kilowatt chargers in the US, most of them at least, not all of them, but most of them have a 350 amp limit. And the Equinox needs to pull 500 amps to get 150 kilowatts. So you should be able to charge much faster on a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger. However, my charge recordings so far, and I have done a lot of them, are proving that's not the case. It's virtually same time, couple minutes earlier, couple minutes quicker to charge on the 350s, and it's quicker if you're going for a really short plug-in. If you're plugging in for 10 minutes, 15 minutes at a low state of charge, yeah, you're better off on the 350. But any long period of charging, matter of fact, once you're charging for about 30 minutes, they're dead even because the 150 catches up because you plug in on the 350, you're going to get about 10 minutes of good charging. And then the vehicle is going to thermally derate itself friggin' down to like 60 kilowatts. It just goes, woo. It goes from taking 500 amps into about 210. And it just chugs along at a low charge rate until it cools off the components that it needs to, and then comes back up. So, you know, I mean, it takes about 40 minutes to add 200 miles of driving range. And, you know, the Lucid Air takes 12 minutes to add 200 charges. That's a $100,000 EV. Maybe you'll say you shouldn't be comparing it, but, hey, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a direct competitor to the Equinox. And that can add 200 miles of driving range in about 23 minutes. So nearly half the time, you know, and even just to add 100 miles of driving range, it's, let me see here in my works, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes for 100 miles. You know, that should be a quick plug in, go to the bathroom, come back out, and you got 100 miles in your EV. So I'm liking the Equinox so far. I think it's a solid choice. There's some bad weak points in that the sound system's terrible. The DC fast charging is definitely a negative. But we've said it before, there's a lot of people that that's just a non-issue for. That just won't, they don't take road trips. And particularly when you're on the coasts, it's a little bit of a less thing where you need to drive really far frequently. It's not a good DC fast charging EV. And my first video is coming out today or tomorrow, and it's got a lot of info in there.
Okay. Well, it's up against some competition. I saw a deal this week, certainly in the California and the ZEV states. I'm not sure it's any wider than that. But Kia on the EV6 light trim, or is it wind for Kia? I forget which one it is. But the long range, at least Kia EV6, and it was like $300 a month because they are putting in a Tesla conquest bonus. So if you're coming from a Tesla, plus if you're in the ZEV states, there's a bunch of other incentives that Kia are throwing in. I'm not sure why it's only in certain places, but it was, you know, more competitive than a $20,000 Kia Soul. And you know, that's a very fast charging EV. And I'm sure not a million miles away what you paid, Tom, for, you know, your Equinox on a monthly cost over the couple of years that you've got it. While we're talking about GM and charging, because what could possibly go wrong this week, General Motors, it wouldn't be a week in EV land if GM didn't make some sort of big announcement. A couple this week, one about a partnership with Hyundai. Get onto that in a minute if we get time. One was with EVgo. And General Motors are going to launch a DC fast charging network with EVgo already operating DC fast chargers. They're going to be 400 fast charging stalls, they say, a new charging network with 350 kilowatt DC fast chargers. But they made a big point of saying that their sites are going to have lighting, canopies, pull-through stations and security near amenities that are customer-centric. So I guess they mean restaurants and coffee shops. They could have just said that.
But Martin, how's that different than the GM EVgo network now?
Well, that's a very good point, because they also pointed out this is all new and it's a big new announcement. Also, that they will carry on installing the metropolitan charging footprint, the rollout of DC fast chargers, and that is ongoing. I think they've got 1,000 stalls in the ground. I think I don't see many people talking about them. I think they're expanding it this year as well. So I was like, isn't it just an expansion of what you're doing already? But apparently not. They're going to make these look like gas stations. So with the pumps all lined up beneath, with the big roof on top, they want to kind of mimic gas stations. At least 20 stalls, they say, for each location, and a total of 400. So, you know, we're not talking about the most amount of sites. You know, 20 sites across the US is a bit of a drop in the ocean, but either way, nice to get. And they talked about deploying them coast to coast. And they specifically named Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, New York, and Texas. Co-branded GM Energy and EVgo. So we know nothing more about that, but high power charging, always welcome. Always nice to get an announcement from GM. It wouldn't feel right if there wasn't a you know, a big partnership. The other big partnership they talked about, I'm not sure there's a huge amount to get into unless I'm proven wrong, in that they also announced a partnership with Hyundai to join forces on production, development, technical collaboration, and the word efficiency in the press conference, press release, I think was the most used. So co-developing technologies. I will wait and see what comes from that. I do think that this wouldn't have happened a few years ago. Firstly, because GM were too busy with Nikola building the Badger. They, you know, Nikola was the great hope for GM. That quietly got forgotten about. And but now Hyundai is the great hope for GM. I don't think that announcement would have happened a few years ago, but with EGMP, with some very compelling cars, we've seen market share growing. Some months in the US, number two behind Tesla. Not every month, but I think Hyundai have earned... earned the right in the US at least to, to be at that top table with someone like GM and collaborate and make that announcement. So we'll wait and see what comes from that. But they weren't specific, just co-developing things. So there we go.
And it's non-binding. We just need to point that out. It's a non-binding agreement. So either company could say, this isn't working out. See you later.
Which seems to happen with companies GM partners with, just saying.
Yeah. But, Mary Barra hadn't got out the leather jacket in at least a week, so she had to get it out to have the picture taken with somebody else in a suit. Because she always looks cool. She's got, the trainers on, the leather jacket. She's all funky. She's very good at building her personal brand. And I'm sure a lovely lady.
She's leading, Martin.
So. What's that?
She's leading, so she's got to look good.
Oh, of course. I thought she's leaving. Gosh, I missed something. No, she is leading the way. She did it. Yeah. I mean, she did it. You did it, Mary. You did it. You electrified the car industry. Well done. Well done, Joe. No, I mean, we only joke. I'm sorry. Everyone's trying very hard at that business, and we thank them for their hard work. Now, another business trying very hard and focusing very hard on the next project and product, the Gravity, the three-row SUV. We're talking Lucid Motors, and this was a week when Dominic was watching this online, I think in real time, because you were certainly live tweeting it to our internal WhatsApp group, and founder and CEO Peter Rawlinson hosted a presentation as part of an event telling the media about the story of Lucid, how it's developed the technology, and all that comes together in their next latest greatest thing, which is the Gravity, which in all seriousness, we are very excited about seeing what they can make. Their business plan, Lucid Air sales have not hit what they wanted to, so a lot of focus is going to be on the Gravity. They did talk about the next midsize. We can have a discussion about that if you want in a moment. And they did talk about how Gravity, when it arrives, will come with native J3400, which I must admit, I thought was a given. For any new EV launching next year and onwards will be native NACS. And anything gets a mid-cycle refresh, like the new Hyundais, they might come with CCS1 to begin with. But that seems to...
The Hyundais are pretty much confirmed with NACS.
Yeah, great. 2025.
So that seemed to be the big story. Everyone kind of went a little bit loopy-loo over, oh my gosh, the Gravity will get NACS. Like, why? What if it shipped with CCS1? That should have been the story of, which it never would. So I don't know why that was a story, but it went everywhere this week. And then I was like, oh my gosh, Lucid is getting in bed with Tesla. A lot of it went wider. The kind of blogs that I tend to follow to learn about the EV industry, the kind of CNBCs of the world. So again, you're not native EV publications, and they were going, oh, Lucid and Tesla, and okay,
that was like, out there already anyway. We knew the Gravity was having the next that I was shocked on Inside EVs. We have a chat where people can post stories, and as soon as they said that, the managing editor put out, somebody hop right on this, Gravity's gonna launch up next, and I responded, hey, that's not news, we know that. this isn't news. Go out there and just search it. You'll see 100 videos and articles saying the Gravity is going to have launch with next, but needless to say, they had to push out a video because everybody else was, an article. So, you can't be the one news outlet that doesn't cover it. But I was like, I'm not going to write that. This is not new.
It's not news. Before we get into a lot of the issues, we will talk about actually the NACS integration, and also I get Kyle's perspective on how it will work and how it should work to get the most out of a Lucid. Dominic, So you watched this and you were, you were super impressed with this. Anything else that got your attention that you think is worth mentioning?
I mean, it was a great presentation. I thought it really kind of it got a lot of attention. It helped their share price, if nothing else. But I think so they had a lot of investors there on site and who got to go for rides. But I think the message was, just good technology, continuing to improve the technology, and really looking for efficiency, because efficiency drives pretty much everything there. As far as it drives profits, because you can, the farther you can go with the less battery, that's the less you can charge for the car, or the more margin you can make. There's really a lot of great, they really got written into good detail on a lot of technology, like the copper winding technology of the in the motors themselves. They have this continuous wave winding technology, they call it. So there's like no hairpins, and it reduces the welds they say by like 90%, and it's like a fully automated process. And that was pretty cool, little insight into that. It was a really great presentation. And we couldn't, of course, go for rides in the car like everybody there. But they did show a little clip, actually. I think I have a thing to it. Yeah. Of the gravity in the parking lot getting kind of caned, basically. It just kind of giving you an idea of what it's kind of capable of, as far as like vehicle dynamics. It comes through this little turn. You can see the kind of swing out the back end just a tad, and then there, and then he comes onto it, and yeah, it just kind of takes off like a rocket. This thing is faster than any EV can needs to be, I think. But
no, everything needs to be faster. What are you talking about? I think and that's coming from you, Mr. Performance Enthusiast.
Right,
looked like it almost had some rear steer action going on, or could the wheel, it could just be the angle and the shape of the wheel playing a little bit of game. But, certainly it looked like they had like stability control set to middle, or maybe even on, but it definitely wants to rotate it. The balance of that car, I watched that clip a bunch and kind of looked at the movements of the car, and man, does it look pretty well set up for some fun, which is the one thing we have to give Lucid credit for. I've been driving the Air quite a while now. And I have to go up to Wyoming today, and I thought I would take the Cybertruck, but now thinking about it, maybe I should take the Air up, but I got to bring the dogs, so we'll take the Cybertruck. But the Air, which is sitting right over here, wow, that car is amazingly fun to drive, but then also has one of the best ride qualities, if not the best ride quality of any modern vehicle. If they can put that in the Gravity, which at least it kind of looks like it's going to, that's going to be such a cool, fast, don't say the word minivan. It's going to be awesome.
It's like a minivan that you want to drive, basically, kind of.
I mean, I hope it's that. And I hope, Lucid says the charging is going to be awesome and everything. And I'm like, well, what you need to hit. So, the competition's out there. You can see our videos. You know what we like. They say we're going to like it. I don't know. We'll see.
And Dom, have you got an image there of the teaser image of the midsize? And that's going to follow the Gravity, costing significantly less. I think this event pinned at under 50K. I believe Peter Rawlinson, the CEO and CTO, has previously said 48K, either in an interview or something in the past. So that was the number in my head. I think this event also pinned under 50 as the number. New Atlas Drive unit will find its way into the Air and
like it.
Thank you. The Gravity. We do. It's very nice, Peter. This is clearly the future. I think it'll to begin with be built in Saudi Arabia. Dom, what can you tell us about the next one after the Gravity, the midsize?
There's no name for it yet. I guess it's showing right at the very end. It's going to have the next generation powertrain, which they're calling Atlas, the Atlas Drive unit. I'm just kind of fast forwarding through. Here we go. Oops. And there it went. Right. Oh, man. Sorry, I'm trying to get this picture on the screen. There's not a whole lot of information about it. Of course, it's a 2026 car, I think they were saying. Maybe it's 27. I'm not sure 26, exactly. Yep. Okay. Well, I mean, that's pretty quick. That's and that's great for the company because they really need to get a volume vehicles out. Like, I think the Gravity is going to do very well volume wise, but then to back it up with it with a $48,000 to $50,000 crossover, you know, I think is really the move. I think it's making some good decisions over there. I'm just wondering, what do you guys think of the styling of this thing? If I can find it. There we go. I mean,
there's not a lot to.
too early to talk about design. Come on. Yeah.
Let's get into charging then. And so, Kyle, how's this going to work when Gravity launches, or when Lucid Airs can charge on Tesla superchargers? So it's going to come with native NACS with J3400 on the side, out of the factory gate. So you buy a Gravity and you rock on up to a Tesla supercharger with your, you know, fancy pants 900 volt or so architecture. What needs to happen between now and then in terms of Lucid's being able to charge on Tesla superchargers natively?
Well, couple things to talk about. Just because it has J3400 doesn't mean you're locked to the supercharger network. For example, the charger I just installed this week is a 1,000-volt capable charger with native NACS. So it's happening. I mean, obviously, we pushed for it. I wanted to have one of the first ones. We installed it, and it's not that hard. The communications are identical to CCS, so you'll always be able to use any public CCS station with an adapter or natively as we start to see them put in native J3400 connectors. So just wanted to make it clear that it's not like just because you put NACS on the car doesn't mean you only have to use superchargers. Superchargers, of course, are the best charging network by far in terms of locations and reliability, but not in terms of the power output and the high voltage capability. And what really we need to see, which will probably not happen in mass scale before this car comes out, is Tesla either retrofitting or supporting high voltage natively with their chargers, going up to 1,000 volts with their supercharger network. We expect it with V4. I don't think it's ever been explicitly confirmed that we're getting it with V4. I'm sure we will be, but high voltage is so important. V4 does not exist, by the way, to anyone watching this. You'll see Tesla even refer in their tweets to version 4 superchargers live. Technically, I think the internal code name is V3 plus. That is when you have the V4 dispenser with the version 3.5 cabinet. But there is no version 4 installed yet anywhere in the world. And my understanding is they just got a $100 million approval for CapEx on the V4 line. So it's happening. I don't know if I'm allowed to share that or not, but I shared it. And so, you know, don't tell me anything I can't tell anyone or tell me I can't say it. But there you go. So it's happening, but it's not happening, you know, soon. You actually got to go with tooling, build the line, put the stuff in. I don't know if the design is done. This really maybe means, I don't know, but it's not happening soon enough. We know that for sure. So how will the Gravity interface with the supercharger network? Well, right now, if we look at Lucid Air, it does it in a way that isn't great. I mean, the thing is, when Lucid Air was designed with the Wunderbox, it was designed to work with the existing charging infrastructure anywhere in the world, and there was no such thing as a 500 volt maximum charger that was more than 50 kilowatts. That just didn't exist. That was open to Lucid. So you would build it to the highest possible power old charger. It's not like they're putting more old chargers in the ground, and then you have a way to charge on those old chargers. No one really expected the supercharger network to open to everyone in our market. Granted, in Europe, yes, but in our market. And so that little Wunderbox can only do about 45 to 47 kilowatts on a good day on the Tesla supercharger network. No Lucid owner is going to want to sit for hours to charge their car up, you know, 3 hours almost to charge their car, and maybe a little bit less, but something like that at a supercharger. So here's some things that Lucid could do to improve charging performance on superchargers. They could do the thing that probably has the least amount of losses, which would be to split the pack, similar to Cybertruck and Q6 and Macan and A6 and that PPE platform, where they could basically go from having the pack in a series configuration to a parallel configuration somewhere in the middle. It has to be evenly split from a voltage standpoint. They could charge the car in a low voltage state and then drive the car in a high voltage state. That sucks because then you're dumping a lot of current in, and your efficiency of the car, because you're concerned about electron efficiency, at least Lucid is, goes out, and you know, you've just blown it away on charging losses. So that sucks. There's no way around it, but that's a way to do it. That's probably the best way to do it. Worse ways, maybe, in my opinion, that might be even more lossy, would be to just upsize the boost converter in the Wonderbox. So do like 150 kilowatt or 200 kilowatt boost converter. I think most Lucid owners would be fine with 200 kilowatts at a supercharger. If you find a public charger that you can give you 350 plus, maybe 400 kilowatts, whatever the car will be capable of taking, I don't know. That seems pretty reasonable to me, especially as Lucid's curves, at least in the past, have been very peaky down low and then they kind of die up top. We don't know if gravity will be that way or not, but I can assume it will have a pretty significant curve. So maybe putting a 200 kilowatt boost converter in can work, or they could pull a Hyundai Kia Genesis and use the inductance of the rear motor windings and actually boost the power up using the you know, the power modules in the rear inverter and the windings of the motor to then charge the battery pack, essentially regenning the battery, which is how Ioniq 5, Ioniq 6, all those vehicles charge on superchargers. So
those are top at like 100 now, right? 100 kilowatts?
It depends on the model. So okay. EV9 will do 86 kilowatts. Okay. Ioniq 5 does 100. Genesis G80 does 120. So it just depends on the motor and the inverter combination.
Right.
And it makes no sense. EV6 GT, I haven't tried ours, but last time I did one, I only got like 50 kilowatts. It was so
weird. That's limited by the maximum regen that that vehicle can provide, right?
No.
If it's
on the rear motor,
they can provide, you know, hundreds of kilowatts.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Just on the rear motor. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But even then, that's not the exact thing. What I can't figure out is why model per model they're different.
That's what I was asking, basically. Why is it different? Yeah.
Don't know.
Because in theory,
yeah, certainly different motors, different inverters, some silicon carbide. I think they're all silicon carbide in the rear, but they may have different power modules, different cooling. I don't know. And I actually have a meeting with Hyundai engineers coming up, and this is on my list of questions to be like, why is this not standardized? What are the limitations? How will you communicate this to your drivers, especially as they're going native NACS? So, I'm meeting with some of the Korean guys soon to talk about all this stuff.
Cool.
So if anyone has any questions,
somehow
let Dominic know. So I got to send them my list of questions by tonight.
Excellent. Yeah, let us know if you're watching this live. Send it in to Dom. He's on Threads, and you can find the email at batteriesincludedpodcast.com. We have just
super detailed. We don't get to talk to the engineers very often. Not anything that the sales guys, the US team, this is stuff that like American Hyundai doesn't know, that we're trying to get answers from the engineers. So super in the weeds stuff.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, that brings us towards the end of what we're talking about this week. A couple of other things that were notable. EPA for the Macan. Macan 4 was 308 miles, which I think is a big number, a good number. It's psychologically above 300. The Macan Turbo EPA 288, 288 miles. That was interesting this week. Stellantis have had...
Can we just talk about that really quick? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've already range tested Macan.
Yes.
And they go way farther than those numbers.
Like the Taycan.
Okay. Is that public, what you did?
Yeah.
Already?
It's live. Yep. And
I don't remember that.
But plenty of Macan stuff coming. I think everyone will enjoy that. Of course, we always cover Porsche pretty closely. But we'll have a bunch of Macan stories rolling here in the next few weeks, hopefully. The range test that I did, I drove a Macan 4 on aeros, but a friend of mine drove a Macan Turbo, same day, same conditions, and they were not that far apart.
Nice.
And I had the smallest wheels and they had the largest wheels. So I think the EPA, both cars should have been over 300 miles. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mentioned quite a week for Stellantis because Euro NCAP tested the Avenger EV, the Jeep Avenger EV, and it got 3 out of 5. They also did it. The batch they did at the minute was Audi Q6 e-tron, Xpeng G6, Ford Explorer EV, all getting 5 stars. And I should point out that the Euro NCAP testing has got more difficult over the years, significantly. What was a 3-star test now might have been a 5-star test not so long ago. So it's not the end of the world. Stellantis responding, saying that some of the stuff they got dinged on, which was the front collision avoidance alerts, were ineffective, that they can update over the air. Some of the side impact protection and passengers hitting each other issues, of course, can't be solved with an over-the-air update. Not saying that the Avenger EV is dangerous, but that's a bit of a, I would say, bloody nose for any car maker not to get a 5-star result. I know people really pay attention to that. Oh, and having a week of it at Fiat, the 500 electric. I love that car. Yeah. Having a 4-week suspension at their Mia Fiori plant in Turin because of of demand. Expensive little thing for what you get. Great little cars, but realigning that with supply and demand.
They sold 204 of them in the US so far in 2024. Hmm. 60,000 in Europe last year. So Europe loves the thing. America, not so much, apparently.
It's a shame, yeah. But great little car, and we don't want negative stories around smaller EVs. We're doing smaller EVs.
What car is this? Sorry, I was just reading the comments for a second. The
Fiat 500 EV.
But Dominic, they only sold a few numbers because they just went on sale.
So, really, it's been, I don't know. I just saw all of 2024, 204. I didn't really get right. It's only been a few months.
I think so. I mean, we just got the press car only a few weeks ago.
Okay. So, right. So it might not be a full year at all then. Okay.
I don't know. I think they're just hitting dealers. Like, I don't know if that's, I'm not here to defend it. I think it's a terrible value. Maybe one of the worst values in the auto industry.
Oh yes. But, buy it because you like a Mazda MX-30, you buy it because you like it, and that's okay. Everyone likes what they like, and there's no right or wrong in that. You definitely, it's like the Honda E or Mini Cooper in many ways, a bit more premium, a bit more expensive for actually what you get if you want the most value. Finally, I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, so I will tie a bow in that. Mercedes-Benz are a big investor in Factorial. They make solid state batteries. Mercedes-Benz confirming this week that those with a non-liquid electrolyte, so it's proper solid-state batteries. They've got them in test vehicles. They didn't say what, where, how and when, but they have them in vehicles on the road and are testing them. 450 watt-hours per kilogram, I think, Dom. You're a battery expert on this. And that they're aiming for, it's the end of the decade, so I want to mention it, but it's not urgent, but... another nice little data point that these improvements in cells are real and they are coming, but don't hold your breath.
Right. There was Toyota had the announcement this week too about their solid state battery. I didn't really pay it a lot of attention until like last night. I looked at the story because it was just like something like the Japanese government giving them permission to manufacture it. So I was like, well, that's not really a story. I mean, why would they say no, right? But I guess the news here is that the official start of production is set for sometime in 2026. So that's relatively new. So they're building the facility to produce those, and they expect it to production to be ramped up in 2027 or 2028. So still towards the end of the decade, still a couple years off. They also said flat to full in 10 minutes. I got really excited until I saw the other story that it's going into the Prius to start with. So it's probably a pretty small battery. So flat to full, I don't know how big is a Prius battery, 10 kilowatt hours maybe? I don't know. So it's really hard to judge, what the gravimetric, how fast it'll charge really and how much energy it'll hold, all that kind of stuff. We just haven't really released that kind of key information yet. But it, it was just good. Interesting for battery nerds, I guess.
I'll make sure I buy a Toyota next. All of them.
Yeah, right. Self-charging one.
We should force Martin to just live with a BZ4X for the rest of time.
Oh, gosh, please, no. Anything but that. If you again, if you own one, nothing wrong with it. Well, there's a few things wrong with it.
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with it. What are you talking about? If you own one, you made a stupid decision.
I'm trying to be nice to people. Don't if they nice did buy
people who are dumb.
And Panasonic said this week the validation testing's all done on with Tesla on the Panasonic 4680s. Gonna be made in Japan and shipped, unlike making them in the US. But that was great news as well. So they can start now pre-production and scale up production of Panasonic making 4680, which is just a form factor, I know, at the end of the day, but to supply Tesla. Because heck, Tesla need a lot more cells as we see those Cybertrucks piling up outside of. I don't mean piling up as in no one wants them, as in they're producing a lot of Cybertrucks at the minute, ready to get handover done before the end of the quarter. I think the last data point I saw was there's last month. I think the month before they outdid the Ford F-150 Lightning, and now I think it was F-150 and Rivian's combined more Cybertrucks registered last month. So someone's buying them. And that's great news because they're available now and you can go and order one and buy your Cybertruck. Oh, and James May, one of the world's most famous automotive journalists, finally got to drive one this week and liked it, called it ballsy. And I thought it was good. He also worked out the capacity of the bed in gin. I mean, it helps that he has some gin to flog at the minute. He'd like you to buy his gin.
I love gin.
Absolutely. So, a nice
James
way.
James gin.
Nice way to measure it. But
wait. What is Nebula saying?
Yeah, this is at the top of the show. Nebula put this little comment that I didn't have it. There was no place.
Hang on. I didn't see this.
Right.
Okay.
So Nebula commented that we are less than a week away from more news about GM's Tesla Access. And then he went on to say some leaks on GM's websites and also directly from a Cadillac dealer. So maybe finally GM's going to get access to the supercharger network, you know, a season late.
Tom, are you going to be the first one to plug in?
You're on mute, Tom.
Sorry. I know nothing.
Yeah.
Yes. This time next week, we'll tell you about GM and Tom plugging in for the first time. Great. Maybe a nice almost photo up with a nice photo up with Mary. She'll get the leather jacket ready.
I really hope those cables are ready for the amperage those cars need.
That's exciting. That's exciting. I mean, that's good, really good for customers as well. Brilliant. All right, that's our podcast for today. Thank you for listening, whether it's to the audio version, which you can get in all the usual places if you search Batteries Included, or you tune in to look at our beautiful faces every single week. Hey, what do you mean face for radio? I'll have none of it. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them below. If you're watching the YouTube version, we stream on X, on Facebook and Twitch as well. But if you're watching the YouTube version and you're not taking part in the live chat, please leave us a comment. We love it. We respond to as many that we can do over the course of the week. We love to have that conversation with you, and it really helps the algorithm. If you like the show, then give us a thumbs up, and even better, share it with somebody who you know that might like to watch or listen to this podcast, whether they're an enthusiast, work in the industry, or would just like to be part of what we talk about every single week. Check out the spin-off shows that we do on midweek on Wednesdays, Battery Bargains, as we try and find the best value, new and used EVs out there for our listeners. You can hit subscribe on any of our shows so you never miss any of them. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.